Now, here's a question. What do Mr. Cadbury, John Deere, Thomas Edison, Enzo Ferrari, the Statue of Liberty maybe even, and Steve Irwin, what do they all have in common, apart from the fact that they're all dead? Is the Statue of Liberty dead? We'll find out, because Anton Savage knows everything. Anton, welcome to the programme. We're going to start with patents. What are we talking about here? Because I think you're going to start with Statue of Liberty. Is it dead?
Yeah, she is. She's definitely told she's not going anywhere. Do you know the other thing with the Statue of Liberty? Have you ever done the Statue of Liberty?
Do you know something weird? I have.
Yeah, isn't it very disappointing in scale?
Well, all those things are very disappointing, really. Do you know what happened to me? Amazing thing. I did the Eiffel Tower right up at the very top. But do you know what I got on the Eiffel Tower? A demo tape.
You did not.
I'm an Irish guy. Dave, you want to listen to this? It was great. Yes, I went to the Statue of Liberty. And do you know something really weird about the Statue of Liberty, which I don't know if you can anymore now, I'm not sure. I actually went into the torch.
In anymore. You were in the torch.
I thought you couldn't, yeah. I thought that
they replaced the torch. The torch used to be glass. It used to be coloured glass. You used to be able to actually apparently see it. Now it's just copper like the rest of it. But
really?
No, there's no going up it anymore.
By the way, I sailed around it only 6 months ago.
Did you?
In one of these fantastic speedboat things. Yeah, seriously. It's amazing. You really go fast around. It's fantastic.
This is out of the South Sea Street Seaport, isn't
it? Yeah, whatever. One of those.
Very nice. The reason we're talking about this is it's anniversaries of patents, of major inventions, and of people of this week. So that's just where we got to this point.
I'm supposed to be in charge here. And like, he's so nicely trying to say, Dave hasn't told anybody what this is all about. I'll just do it in the nice way without necessarily exposing Dave.
We had it done subtly there, Dave. We'd managed.
That was well done.
Interesting you mention Eiffel. Because Eiffel, of course, did the internal structure for the Statue of Liberty. He designed all of the stuff.
He throws in the, of course. What are you on about, Professor?
It's true.
I'm sure it is, but it's not as though people are meant to know that, which is the implication of saying, of course.
That's a fair point. Yeah, okay. Let me strip out the of
Your
course
Honor.
And just pitch it as a
I
fact.
Object.
Interestingly, yes. Gustav Eiffel was the man who did all. And as far as I know, I think the Statue of Liberty was actually put together and stood in the streets of Paris.
Oh, yeah.
Before she was shipped
There's
across.
Actually a guy called Gustav Eiffel. Is that who he is? That's the very man.
Really? Eiffel Tower and the guy who
did
the Statue of Liberty. But the fellow who actually designed and got the patent for the Statue of Liberty was Auguste Bartholdi. And when he originally designed her, which was February the 18th, it was anyway this week, whenever in 1879, he designed her as a Muslim. She was originally planned to stand at the Suez Canal at the Egyptian side, and he had her in full headdress as a sort of a Muslim god or goddess. And the Egyptians went, nah, you're all right.
Are you
like
telling
her.
Me this was made in France? This was constructed in France,
correct.
Put up there in France, and to be given to the Suez Canal, but to actually be given to New York? They're looking
no, they didn't get that far. They, your man Bartholdi patented it. Went, lads, you know what I have that you might like? I have a big giant copper lady.
Oh, yeah.
They went, nah, we've already got one. And they didn't take it. He then said, New York, you'd like it, lads. And him and Eiffel got it to happen. And that was 200 and something years ago, 1879.
Yeah, 40.
That's the very one. Far more importantly, the year before that, 1878, February the 19th, Thomas Edison, you'll like this, received a patent for the phonograph.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So that's this week, 100 and something, or
yeah,
200.
That's recorded music.
Yes,
Dave.
Indeed. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm very impressed with all this.
Of all recorded
fantastic.
Music.
Fantastic. Come on, Tom.
What do you. The first one was a tinfoil tube, and it didn't work very well because if you played it more. Do you remember the old days records used to wear out?
Not really.
Oh, yeah, if you overplayed a record, the
action. It gets scratched, all right.
No, you could. If you overplayed the one song on a record, the action of the stylus.
I didn't know.
Would wear down the vinyl. Right. Well, the same thing happened with these tinfoil tubes, only they happened in, I think, about 3 plays. So you could only do 3 plays of it in the original.
It's like Mission Impossible.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It wasn't a very successful thing, but he had the patent for it. And of course, what's interesting about Thomas Edison when it comes to patents is he, for a while, held the record for most patents, and he's still right up at the tippy top of patenting in the US because, of course, he had a team of thousands who had to squirrel away inventing things when he became successful, and he would then go.
So they'd like come from Edison Inc. Kind
correct.
Of. All right, okay.
But it would be his name on
how
the
many
patent.
Will we be talking about?
He had more than 1,000 over the
what?
Years.
What?
Yeah, more than 1,000.
And
patents.
Ranging from what to what?
Ranging from some. There's some very weird stuff. He invented a form for pouring a concrete house. So. Mm. Have you ever
poured a concrete house?
Have you ever poured concrete anyway?
Not in the last month.
Okay. Well, you will then, of course, know that if you're trying to make concrete into a shape, you build a thing called a form. So you just make it out of plywood and you pour the concrete into it and then it stays in that shape. If you own an old house and you look at your windowsills, you may even see the pattern of the wood from the form still in it.
Yeah.
He decided, do you want to be brilliant at it? I'll build one of these things two stories high and 30 feet in either direction, and you'll just pour concrete if it'll be in the chimney, and it'll come out as a house at the end of it, and you'll be able to churn out houses at a rate of two a day.
Do you know, if I looked at the windows of my house, that wouldn't happen, because you say he was in this all happened in 1878 direction, right?
Yeah.
My house is 1835.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
There you are. So he didn't have any say in my house.
Yeah. So that's one,
Tommy,
is the concrete house. One of the other ones then is he was actually, he didn't patent it. He was partially responsible for the existence of the electric chair. And he was responsible for it because of corporate competition. Right?
Go on.
So you go back to the mid-1800s. You have Thomas Edison, who is a big fan of DC power. He has a chap working for him called Nikola Tesla.
Aha!
David
Aha.
Bowie.
Aha. David Bowie in that movie, The Prestige, where he's throwing all the hats. What a bit.
Yeah. So, Nikola Tesla, working for Edison, says, DC, complete pile of crap. What you need to be going with is AC, is alternating current. The difference we don't care about, but it is to do with it's easier to transmit but more difficult to generate. Edison said, pshaw, I don't believe you. Tesla has a big sulky falling out with him and goes to work for a man called George Westinghouse. George Westinghouse is trying to produce AC generators. Edison decides that he wants to prove that AC is lethally dangerous. So when people begin to talk about the possibility of developing an electric chair, Edison secretly funds them to use Westinghouse's AC generators to kill people.
That's very
so he's in part
weird.
It's good competition, right? Like, as corporate competition goes, you don't involve murder in that much anymore. Like, Microsoft hasn't found a way to kill somebody to make Apple look bad.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, I think I saw a movie about this kind of thing quite recently with some famous people in it, but I don't know, I can't remember.
Well, Edison, you might have, because Edison's involvement in the electrocution of stuff goes beyond the electric chair. Edison killed a lot of stuff with electricity. Again, because he wanted to prove that AC power was faulty. So he took to electrocuting dogs. So he would do road shows where he'd electrocute dogs with AC power and say, it's dangerous. Yes.
What?
Yeah, but his crowning achievement in the murder of innocent animals was in, I think it was 1909-ish, an elephant called Topsy. I'm not making this up. And it's very sad. This elephant called Topsy had been, they had decided that she was a bad elephant because she had killed somebody, which if you're a display elephant in Coney Island, it's a black mark against you. And this is pre-SeaWorld. So in those days, once you killed somebody, they took the animal away from the attraction. So after a while, they decided, we have to get rid of Topsy. But what do you do when you've got an elephant you want to kill? Because they're big. Like, I assume they're difficult to kill. So Edison said, well, we'll use Westinghouse's generators. That will prove that AC is dangerous.
Yeah.
And he filmed the entire thing. And if you are so macabre that you want to, the video of Topsy being electrocuted by Thomas Edison is available on YouTube even as we speak.
No, thanks, but I'll take your word for it. That's incredible. By the way, we are talking to Anton Savage. And I did mention Mr. Cadbury, John Deere, Thomas Edison, Enzo Ferrari, Steve Irwin, the Statue of Liberty, and inventions, patents, and also anniversaries, because so much of all of this seemed to happen this week. Well, in
it
some
did.
Ways, of dates.
That was the patent for the phonograph was this week. And Edison, as an aside, Edison was best pals with Ford and with Firestone, and they ended up buying holiday homes together on a river all side by side with each other. And there is a possibly apocryphal story that goes that they were stopped in a Ford Model T at one point by a cop in the States who asked their names, and Ford said, well, I'm Henry Ford, I designed the car. Thomas Edison said, well, I made the lights. And they said, who are you in the back? Firestone, I did the
tires. Jacks. I thought you were going to say, didn't they do toilets as well? He did the tires, really? Did they get off?
I don't think there was much you got penalised for back for in a Model T back in the
day. About John Deere or Luther Kroll or one of those people?
Well, Luther Kroll is interesting. Luther Kroll was the man who patented the machine that manufactured paper bags.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Stop looking at me. Stop stopping. Keep going.
This is more significant than you think about. Back in 1872, if you went to the shops, how did you get your shopping home? Because this was pre-plastic, so you didn't have the bag for life.
And you didn't steal the trolley. No.
They didn't even have trolleys.
Oh,
so you would have to carry a wicker basket to the shops to bring it. He invented a machine that could make disposable paper bags at some rate of speed and completely revolutionised shopping and made it that you could go and carry your own shopping home. 1872.
Amazing. I didn't know that.
John Deere, 1865. February the 21st. So another 5 days.
Yes, to me that's tractors.
Yeah.
But I presume there's more. You're going to tell me. No, he's just a tractor man.
He's just a tractor
John man. Tractor Deere.
Yeah. Really? But he's a very interesting tractor man. He received a patent for ploughs this week in 1865. Again, you're talking about something that was massively impactful in the way we all live. Because if you don't have ploughs behind tractors, you don't have industrialised agriculture. If you don't have industrialised agriculture, that turnip is a very expensive thing. But the interesting thing about John Deere as a company is what they did in the Great Depression. Because when the Great Depression hit America, a lot of farmers there, had leased equipment. So you wouldn't be buying...
Hold on a second. That'd be 29 into the 30s and correct. The rest of it. Okay, and we're talking here about the 19s.
Yes, so about 50 years after this.
But yeah, I was just wondering.
The major impact for the John Deere company, because they made this ethical decision where they said, we will not repossess farm equipment from farmers who needed to sustain their livelihood, and we won't seek payment on our leases from farmers who are under pressure. Yeah. We'll extend the duration and all of those, and it has created a loyalty for John Deere, a sort of a legacy of loyalty that has lasted nearly 70 years in the States because of them being seen to have done the decent thing back in the early 1920s, all based on the plough that they started this week.
No, that's a lesson for today.
How's that?
I think
pretty
that's
good.
Brilliant.
I like birthday.
Yeah. John Deere. Yeah, go ahead.
William Cadbury.
Yep.
February the 17th, 1865.
Same day as my brother. Well, no, not 1865. No, but February 17th, yeah. Tell me about William Cadbury.
William Cadbury was a Quaker. He was the man who founded Cadbury, which means all of the chocolates that we have come to know and love so much. He was responsible for that. But far more importantly, because of the Quaker heritage, he had a commitment to looking after his workforce. And he was the first company that started not working on bank holidays. So on August 1st, when you're sitting in the
Sorry, what was a bank holiday that one could decide not to work on one? I mean, what does that actually mean? That the Bank of England didn't work on a Monday, so the whole world didn't work on it? I don't know.
These are the questions that I should have researched before this piece. I think it was literally that.
There's about eight of them in Ireland in a given year. Well, I think you'd be better off being able to allow those dates to be any time you like rather than have to take that Monday.
That's genius.
It'd be much better.
So you get your own arbitrary bank holiday.
Well, you could make an extra week on your holidays that you might want to be away from instead of one day over a weekend.
It'd have great impact on airplane tickets as well, because if you want to go away, because everybody goes away on the bank holidays, whereas if you chose your own...
As it is, they should have every Friday off anyway.
Why are you not in charge
of
the
place? People work 7 days a week, five working, two off. That's madness. Madness.
Crazy.
Life is too short.
And you're expected to do 30-something hours as well.
Nonsense. Yeah, well, I tell you, a lot of people would do that 30 hours in the 4 days, so I don't know why I'm right. But they would if they thought they could get Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off. Yeah. You're better off working on Monday anyway, because it's a poxy day.
Mondays. Yeah. Tell me why you don't like Mondays, Dave. Boom. Do another birthday.
Town rats. Okay, go on. Where were you?
Oh, yes. Enzo Ferrari.
Yeah. No, wait a minute. No, in the way, you hadn't finished on the Cadbury's, have you?
That's it. They gave us the bank holiday. What do you want? They gave us the cream egg and the bank holiday. How much can one company do for you, Dave?
Very good. Okay, fair enough. Go on. Yep.
Enzo Ferrari, born 1898. And a man whose career was defined almost entirely
cars, by cars, I bet you.
Dead on.
You know about that. You're a bit of a petrol person, aren't you?
Well, I'll give you one that is sort of vaguely unlinked to cars, just to ease you into it. Do you know that the Pope had a Ferrari?
Do you know, I didn't, but I don't necessarily find that fascinating because I actually don't really care. Give me something I might be interested in.
Well, fine then. We'll go back to Ferrari. Well, I should. I'm going to finish on. No, I won't finish the Pope having a Ferrari. Ferrari was an extraordinary chap in that he was quite obstinate. So Ferrari decided that he wanted to go and race cars, and he wanted to make his own racing cars. And at a certain point, he discovered that you need to spend a lot of money to do this because it's quite an expensive habit, especially back in the day when there was no sponsorship. So you had to find a way to find your own revenues. Therefore, to fund his racing, he started making road cars, but he always hated them. He sort of regarded them as a side issue compared to the race team. And he famously, to one customer who came in and complained about something to the car, about the car, he said, "You don't understand. We sell you the engine. We just give you the car to take it away in." As in, don't bother me.
Ooh,
one of the customers that he had a falling out with was an Italian tractor manufacturer by the name of Ferruccio Lamborghini.
I see where this one's
going. Lamborghini got so thick with Ferrari for their customer care and the way that Enzo had treated them.
Or lack of.
Yeah, in your face, Enzo, I'm going to make my own cars. And the two major Italian supercar manufacturers have been locked in competition ever since just because Ferrari wasn't nice enough. Ferruccio Lamborghini.
That's another example of it's good to be nice. Like, see? The company you mentioned earlier on.
Give you another one.
Yeah.
Henry Ford decided way back in the day that he wanted to get into motorsport and get into racing. So he went to Ferrari and started getting into the deal to buy Ferrari, to take it off him, because the old man was was knocking on at that stage, and it seemed like a logical thing. Halfway into the deal, the way that Ferrari dealt with his side of the negotiations so annoyed Henry Ford that he told him to stick the entire deal, went off, and set about beating him in any way that he could. So Ford developed its whole motorsport division just to stick it to Enzo Ferrari, whose birthday was this week back in
121 years ago or thereabouts. Yeah, exactly.
More or less,
And what was I going to say? Has Charlie's Angels not come into this? Is there nothing about
You're curious about that. It links to the Pope having a Ferrari day.
Okay, all right. Let's hear the Pope's Ferrari and Charlie's Angels.
The Charlie's Angels link to the Pope having a Ferrari was there was a Ferrari in the movie Charlie's Angels. Do you remember? It was a classic.
I don't remember, no, but go on.
Come on. Drew Barrymore and...
Yeah, no, I remember that. I saw the movie. It went in one ear and out the other. By the time I was on the bus home, it was gone.
I can't remember the Ferrari that was in it, but apparently there was a Ferrari in it, at the end of which they had this leftover Ferrari. So Luca di Montezemolo, and I name him just because I like saying.
Whoa, what's his name?
It's Luca di Montezemolo.
Sorry?
Luca di Montezemolo was the president of Il Duce. I don't know what they called him in Ferrari, but he was the boss of Ferrari. He took this leftover Charlie's Angels Ferrari and gave it to the Pope. And there was a presentation.
Is that why the Pope has one?
Because it came had one.
Right, okay.
And not the current Pope. The last Pope, bar two, I think.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah, okay. A couple of Popes ago.
A couple of Popes
ago. Luca di Montezemolo.
A few Popes back. Okay.
Gave him a Ferrari. They did a big presentation in the Vatican, which I don't know much about the nuances of Catholicism, but my understanding was that you know, flaunting things like Ferraris as gifts probably didn't fit with the whole poverty thing that is meant to be at the core of it. But anyway, the Pope took it and flogged it and got 1.1 million because obviously it had been in Charlie's Angels.
I thought you were going to say it had been in the Pope's hands.
That's secondary.
All right, okay. Wow, that's a lot of money. Okay, by the way, I mentioned Steve Irwin earlier on. Why did I mention him?
Steve Irwin was born 1962, February
22. Okay.
Sadly missed, but... I tried to find, was there something that we could find about Steve Irwin that you mightn't otherwise know?
I can tell you something you mightn't otherwise know. He came into this studio one day and I talked to him for a good while and he brought a snake with him.
No.
There you are, yeah.
You interviewed him?
Yeah, he was here, yeah.
Was he a nice guy?
He was a lovely guy, yeah. To be honest, I didn't really know him or not. I hadn't seen him on TV at all, everybody else had. But yeah, we got on great. Me and Steve were like that. Wow.
Steve Irwin, I was trying to find, little did I know that he had presented a snake to Dave Fanning, otherwise that would have been my fact. But the fact that I found out is that he has a turtle named after him. He discovered a turtle.
Right. Okay, well, I'm sure people have planets named after them. Give me something better than that.
Hey, the discovery of an entirely new species of turtle to science is pretty impressive.
What's the turtle called? Steve? Steve the turtle.
It's actually called the Irwin turtle.
Oh, really?
Steve would have been kind of cooler. Technically, he's...
I presume there's lots of different types of turtles.
There's tons of turtles. Yeah, there's Donatello, there's Leonardo.
Oh, okay, but come on. He's got
what's interesting about this turtle, though, is it breathes through its ass. It's true.
Does it now?
Yes, yeah.
Is that another word for breaking wind?
No. Okay. Breaking wind is when you only exhale. This one also inhales through its bottom.
Okay.
Technically, it's called the cloaca, which is a sort of a...
Okay.
I think it's like a kangaroo's pouch for your genitals. You keep all your bits tucked in your cloaca.
Very good.
It has the...
Handy.
Yeah.
For travel.
It has the capacity to take water into its cloaca and kind of... pump.
Okay, sorry.
It has a sort of a gill setup down there that by circulating the water through, it can absorb some oxygen from it and it can therefore spend far more time underwater than your standard.
Thanks to the gill setup down there.
Thanks to having a gill setup in your cloaca.
Oh, God. Okay, well, after that, that's enough, actually.
1962.
Great. So all those, by the way, are anniversaries or whatever the word is. Okay, Anton Savage, it's been real. Thank you so much, Anton.